Blog Talk Radio.
We're here, and we're on. This is Jeff Bushman, and the show is called Speaking of Everything. Actually, it's called Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman, but that's close enough. Good evening to any and all. We are going to cover a number of topics tonight, and if anyone chooses to call, which I'm not expecting, but such calls are welcome, we will perhaps diverge. But we have another 59 minutes together, so if you would care to join in, the phone number to call into the show is area code 347-994-3796. And we're going to cover a number of topics tonight, politics, of course, and economics and celebrity death and an apology, and also how to influence legislation, among other things. I guess that would also be politics. By the way, if you do call in, I'd like to explain something now, in the event you do wish to call in, so that it avoids a communication problem, which I noticed last week. When you call into Blog Talk Radio, there is not what technicians refer to as full duplex. And basically what that means is that we can't both talk at the same time and be heard at the same time. And in addition to not being able to be heard over the computer-based radio, if you will, the internet-based talk show, if you're talking and I start to speak, you won't hear me, and vice versa. So the respectful suggestion is that when someone else is speaking, unless it's urgent that you interrupt, you may want to wait about one tick, or if you will, as in a TikTok, press your finger down once on a chair or on your lap, and then start to speak after the other person has finished. So the two-way conversation might be something like, how do you feel about that? I feel fine. Give it that one brief second. That way everyone will hear all of your transmission. And almost as importantly, all of mine. The first thing we're going to touch base on is next week. That is, we're going to talk about next week. Next week we have a guest scheduled, and for our Canadian and English friends, scheduled, who will be talking about a gadget I may have made reference to last week during the show. And the gadget is a device that will allow you to take a record, 33 and a third RPM LP, for those of you who remember those things, and have them, or your parents or grandparents do. It allows you to record what's on that LP directly to a CD or an MP3 so that you can clearly take that music with you. And this is also a way of preserving the music and other recorded types of things that are on records that are not yet on CDs. So if that interests you, be sure to tune in next week. We will be on again next week, the same time, between 8:30 and 9:30 Pacific. In a few weeks, and we'll announce it on the show prior to it, we will return to when we were on last week, which is from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific. So let's first cover the news of the weird. And this comes from a website which you can access called, oddly, newsoftheweird.com. And we'll just cover a couple of things that were on that website when we checked last week. There was a survey by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. They revealed that among nations, the Japanese and Koreans sleep the least per night, while the French spend the most time at both sleeping and eating. And I will share with you that the observation that I made was that maybe they just meant that the French spend more time in bed. But irrespective of that, that's what the information is. And the next item, also from News of the Weird, was that a Tokyo rail company, a railroad, installed a face scanning machine so that employees on reporting for work can tell whether they're smiling broadly enough to present a good impression. Basically, it scans it and presumably gives them a beep if they're smiling enough and gives them some other signal if they're not. The National Institutes of Health recently awarded $3 million to the University of Illinois in Chicago to identify the things that cause lesbians to drink alcohol. This is an important study and worth every penny of the $3 million. It'll be very important, said research director Tonda Hughes, to compare why they drink with why heterosexual women drink. This is a different grant from the ones reported earlier to study why gay men in Argentina drink and why prostitutes in China drink. And I don't know about you, but I think that's a wonderful expenditure of our money. People drink because they want to drink. In any event, that's News of the Weird from newsoftheweird.com. We mentioned money being spent, so let me segue into a discussion of healthcare reform, or more correctly, healthcare financing reform. Not many people understand, all of you do, of course, but not many people understand that the discussion that's taken place about the healthcare reform legislation that's being considered by Congress and battered by the news media, among others, that will cost taxpayers $8 trillion. Frankly, that's not true for a number of reasons. One of them is that the $1 trillion, first of all, is over 10 years. So at the risk of offending anyone and everyone, I decided to do some math. $1 trillion is the same as 1,000 billion. I realize many people know that, but I wanted to make sure that it's clear to everyone. And by the way, there is an entirely different counting system in Britain. But in the United States and much of the Western world, a billion is 1,000 million, and a trillion is 1,000 billion. So if we take the $1 trillion and divide it by 10, since 1,000 divided by 10 is 100, that's $100 billion a year. Okay? $100 billion a year is still a good chunk of money. But if you take that and divide it among the population of the United States, you will get another figure that's smaller. And that will tell you how much it would cost under that plan, under that budgetary item, what it would cost per year per person in the United States. As I said, the $1 trillion sounds expensive until you break it down. So we have $1 trillion for 10 years translated to $100 billion per year. And if you divide that by the population of the U.S., which is 320 million approximately, what you get is what it would cost per person, as I said, per year for the program. The number may surprise you with regard to how small it is, $312.50 per person. So all of the heartache, all of the screaming, all of the shouting, all of the fighting is about $312.50 per year per person in the United States. Doesn't seem like a great deal of noise and not a whole lot of light. So you're welcome to do my math. Check me, make sure I'm right. And if I'm wrong, call me tonight or next week. And the phone number, by the way, to call in is 347-994-3796. But the important thing is it's $312.50 per person per year. One of the reasons that's important is because the debate needs to change, and I'm going to give you some information as to how you can help change the debate. Besides knowing what I just said and having that conversation with people who are against all of the health care reform plans that are before Congress, it also is important, I would suggest, that you contact your congressional representative and U.S. senator to let them know that you understand that the $1 trillion over 10 years translates to $312.50 per person per year, and tell them that not only are you willing to spend that, but you insist that they vote for it. And hopefully they'll begin to pick up that that mantra that it's only $312.50 per person per year. And I'd like to tell you how to contact your congressional and senatorial representative. The phone number is area code 202-224-3121. That'll get you to the Capitol switchboard that is in the District of Columbia. That'll get you to the Capitol switchboard, and at that point, you can tell them your address and your zip code, and they will tell you who your congressional representative is. And if you don't know who your senator is, there are only two of them for every state, They'll also tell you who your senator is. So that's the phone number for that, 202-224-3121. And if you believe that President Obama needs to be aware that the people are supporting a public option, you can make a comment on the White House comment line. The phone number for that is 202 area code, 456-1111. And if you have trouble remembering that, just think about 202 area code, which is for all of Washington, D.C., 456 and a small picket fence, 1111, four pickets. So that basically is that. Again, $312.50 per person per year for health care reform, if it's in fact $1 trillion for 10 years. And one of the reasons that figure is false anyway is the following. And there's two reasons. One has to do with the fact that not everything in terms of health care expense that we pay out is related to the federal government spending. And the other one is because of how we pay for things, I beg your pardon, that the government spends. To some extent, with regard to the latter, it's kind of a shell game, but I want to briefly explain it. In terms of the expenses we incur, very simple. Government spends money for aid to people who are on Medicaid, for example. And Medicaid is called different things in different states. In 48 of the 50 states, it's Medicaid. In California, it's Medi-Cal. In Arizona, it's Access. But in all of the other states, what Medicaid is, and it's true of those two programs in those two states, is federal funding and state administration, and I believe to some extent state money, for aid to what is called the medically indigent. That's what that is. Now, some money goes from government coffers to pay for that health care that the really poor who have sought that aid have received. But there is a great deal more money that's spent in terms of health care for people who are poor but either have not qualified for Medicaid or who are working poor. In other words, they're not well off enough to be able to afford to go to the doctor or get health insurance, but they occasionally need health care, as we all do. The estimate on the number of uninsured people there are in the United States is 47 million. That is about one-seventh of our population. One out of every seven people in the United States, man, woman, child, is uninsured. A great deal is made, by the way, by conservatives, that many of those folks are 20 years old and healthy and they don't want insurance. The reality, however, is that many of them are 20 years old and healthy and they want insurance, but they can't afford it. And it's kind of important they do get insurance because in the present system, because if they don't, they may at some point in the relatively near future, as a woman pointed out to me the other evening, become uninsurable. They may get a pre-existing condition. Once you have a condition that's pre-existing under the current system, an insurance company can choose not to insure you or will charge you very, very high rates, or they will exclude that pre-existing condition from your coverage. So getting back to the financing aspect, some of the money we all spend, which has nothing to do with government expenditures and therefore nothing to do with taxes, is when someone who is a member of the working poor goes into an emergency room because they finally get into a situation where they can no longer put off medical care. They go in, they get the medical care, they can't afford to pay for it, they don't pay for it. It may go to collection, it may not. Whatever happens, it's not paid for. Who pays for that care? Well, the government does not reimburse the hospital or doctor. What happens is the hospital and doctor do what any business would do when some of the income they were counting on doesn't come in. They raise prices. If they raise prices, that doesn't necessarily affect the government. It does to some small extent in terms of government programs. But the people that it affects most directly is all of us, you, me, your family, and mine. Because what happens is we pay higher prices for our drugs, we're talking legal drugs now, and we pay higher prices for hospital care and for medical care because they've got to make it up somewhere. So that's what they do. So we spend millions and millions, perhaps billions of dollars. No one's got a clear figure on this. of money to pay for the uninsured who receive medical care. That's not part of the budget. So one of the things that we would be saving if we went through the public option and the healthcare reform that's being talked about now is we would save that, but it wouldn't have any effect on the budget's bottom line or the deficit. It would just have to do with our personal expenses. So whatever we're paying for in taxes, the $312.50 a month, part of that would be made up for by the fact that we're not paying for higher medical expenses because the working poor have received care and can't afford it, because the illegal alien who has been fearful of applying for Medicaid gets medical care and doesn't pay for it. That's what's happening. And by the way, I mentioned illegal aliens who are fearful. There are also people in this country who qualify for aid but are fearful of applying for it, particularly Latinos, not exclusively, but particularly Latinos, who, though they're legal, fear government. Poor people do have a tendency to fear government. And when someone's in this country, even legally, as a legal resident or as a citizen, sometimes that's also occurring. So that's something to keep in mind when you hear discussions about, it's going to cost $1 trillion. Yeah, $312.50 a person. But some of that's going to be made up for by what other expenses I don't have to incur to pay for people who are uninsured, which is not a government expenditure. Okay, enough of that. The other thing, finally, on the expenditure, which is not clear, we don't pay taxes to pay for that health care reform program. It's deficit spending. Now, you can think that's a horrible idea or a wonderful idea. The fact is, the government spends more than it takes in. And unlike you and I, when that happens, they don't put it on a credit card as such. They do what's called selling bonds, government bonds. Those are bought for, you've probably heard, a lot of those are bought by the Chinese government as a means of getting interest. They're paid interest on that. And they hold a lot of our national debt, again, good or bad. But here's where the difference comes in. This is a little hard for people to grasp. I'll try to make it a little easier. We're paying for today's debt with tomorrow's dollars. Okay, obviously if you borrow, you're paying back later. But that said, what ends up happening is when you are paying back with tomorrow's dollars, they are worth a little less, so you're paying less. And quick example is, if you bought a loaf of bread many years ago for a dollar, now that loaf of bread is going to cost three. Therefore, that's like 33 cents of your old dollars. All right, we have a call. We're going to take that, and if I can figure out how to do it again. Okay, are you there? Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Hi,
Hi.
What's your name?
My name is Alicia.
Okay, Alicia, what is it you have in mind to talk about?
I am finding your discussion of healthcare very interesting, and some of the statistics you've cited are surprising and hopeful. One thing I am very concerned with the healthcare situation, is the fact that our president, who I did vote for and I've had very high hopes for, is not really being very proactive in bringing about any kind of definite change. He's not making specific suggestions. He's not carrying a hard enough line, I don't think, with the Congress. And I'm very concerned. I don't know what has happened with him, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about Obama and the health care situation.
Well, I share the concern. I agree with you. The only thing I would add is he is making this speech in 2 weeks, and what I fear is that he's going to cave and say, okay, we don't need a public option. What I hope is that he's going to say, this is the way it is, this is the program I'm going to sign, and I won't sign anything that lacks the public option, or something like that, but I don't know. One of the things that a number of people have said is that while everybody else is playing checkers, Obama is playing chess, and this is all part of his grand plan, but I have no idea if that's true. So it's one of those things we'll have to wait and see.
And what is going to happen to the future of the Democratic Party if he does not have the strength and commitment to to do what he needs to do with this is another concern.
Yeah, I agree. The thing that that's important is that something pass. It was being spoken about by someone earlier today that when Bill Clinton's or Hillary Clinton's health plan failed in 94, it was followed by a congressional election in which the Republicans took the House and the Senate, which had been the first time that had happened in a number of in a long, long time. And my fear is that if nothing passes, that'll happen. But something can pass. I just think it takes some guts on the part of the president and on the part of the Democrats in the House. And then it's a matter of going through what's called the reconciliation process when the Senate and House pass different bills. I think it can be done. One of the reasons I gave out the White House comment line is because I'm hoping that people will, in fact, call it and say, we want the public option, don't give it up. And while I have you on the line, I'll use this to do it again. It's 202-456-1111. Anything else you wanted to say?
Just that, you know, this is not the person that I thought we were electing, and I hope that we get back that person who campaigned for the presidency. We desperately need him.
Okay, well, no argument, and all I can say is, you know, we'll hope and see what happens. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Okay, with that, I would say we have a line open, but we had several before, and we still have lines open. So if you wish to call in, again, it's 347 area code, 994-3796. And anyway, enough about healthcare directly in that context. I would like to touch upon one more subject regarding health, which has to do with the swine flu. There is a lot of debate now about how serious swine flu is going to be, the I don't even remember what it's called anymore, HNN1 or something. But we all know it is swine flu. I am a lay herbalist, among other things. And one of the things that you learn in natural health is that there is a way to prevent and overcome viruses. So I want to talk about that in a minute. But before I do, I'm going to use this opportunity to invite you all to do two other things, and you may consider this a semi-commercial moment. I have written a book called Mobile Millionaire, which discusses the experience and is a guidebook with respect to investing in mobile homes and profiting from it, building wealth from it, by buying them and either renting them out or selling them with financing, obviously with interest. I invite you to the webpage where the book is sold, which is tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. I'll repeat it. That's tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. There you can read excerpts from the book. It's in a PDF format, the Adobe PDF format. And if you wish to obtain the book, you can do so at that site with PayPal or credit card. They'll do it all. I never see your credit card. I'm not aware at that point of, you know, who you are, but you can obtain the book there. And even if you decide you don't want to buy the book, that's fine, but I would suggest you, if you are interested in making an investment with little or actually zero money, and making a good profit over time, then I would invite you to go there and at least read the excerpts. And I think you can benefit from what you learn just from that, although not nearly as much as with the book, of course. And finally, if you've got a, not finally, but finally for now, if you have a website in your business but are not blogging, one of the things I do is blogging for businesses that fit that profile. And I do it inexpensively, and one of the reasons I do is because in your blog, I will include a link to my website where the book is sold. It's not my website, but to the website where my book is sold. And because of that, clearly I have an advantage in blogging, but I'll also charge you a little bit because writing is work. Additionally, if you have that business and are not blogging, although you have a website, the blogging itself is going to move your website up when someone does a relevant Google search, simply because one of the criteria that Google uses is how many links there are to your website. Whether or not anyone clicks on your link, just having the link. And if you have a blog that we do for you every 2 weeks, you're going to have another link. That, in a year, is going to get you 26 links to your website, which is going to increase your visibility on the web in terms of Google searches and obviously increase your business. And if you're interested in that or want to know more, you may go to www, all one word now, Jeff on Blogging. That's J-E-F-F on B-L-O-G-G-I-N-G .blogspot.com. And I'll repeat it once. jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Getting back to the show content now. A lot of natural health practitioners believe that the key way to prevent viruses is by using vitamin C. Now, this doesn't mean drinking a glass of orange juice every day. There's nothing wrong with that, assuming you don't have any allergies to oranges or anything like that. But in an average orange that's just off the tree, you will get 45 milligrams of vitamin C. And vitamin C is time-sensitive, heat-sensitive, and light-sensitive. So if you're storing your orange juice in a plastic container that is a see-through, plastic container in the refrigerator, the amount of vitamin C you get when you pour that glass of orange juice after it's been in the refrigerator in the store and in your home is very minimal. So taking the vitamin C pill is actually going to improve the amount of vitamin C you get, whether it's 500 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams. Now, you can't take a lot of vitamin C all at one time or it will affect your stomach. What many people suggest is that you take 500 milligrams in the morning, 500 milligrams in the evening, and after a couple of weeks, increase that so you add one at lunch. And after a couple of weeks more of that you make one of your doses 1,000 and so forth until you build up, until you're taking vitamin C throughout the day in 1,000 milligram doses. But again, you don't want to do that too quickly. You want to maintain a dosage for at least 2 weeks to make sure your stomach can handle it. I will tell you that I take an enormous amount of vitamin C compared to some people. When I am working during the day, when I'm basically awake, I take 1,000 milligrams an hour, at least until the evening. And besides the fact that I don't tend to get sick, except very, very rarely, and that's usually because I didn't sleep enough and I forgot to take my vitamin C, I really don't get sick. So that's something you may wish to consider or research further. The way that the virus is prevented, according to the research, is the following. Viruses replicate by entering your cell and using your cell's mitochondria to reproduce. And then if enough cells are contaminated with the virus, you get sick. What happens once you have a virus is not that anybody is doing anything to cure it necessarily, but what happens is the virus runs out of steam and stops being able to penetrate the cells, and so you get better. The old joke is that if you get a cold and don't do anything, it lasts a week. And if you medicate yourself and take really good care of yourself, it'll last you 7 days. But the truth is that first off, prevention is better than cure. And I hesitate to use the word cure, but resolving the cold. So if you want to prevent it, vitamin C, what it'll do is it makes the membrane, this is an oversimplification, of course, it makes the membrane of your cell harder for the virus to enter. If the virus can't enter your cell, then it can't reproduce or can't reproduce as much. The more cells it has difficulty entering, the more rapidly it burns itself out and basically is eliminated from your body. Likewise, once you have a virus, once you know you have a cold, if you're taking vitamin C in sufficient amounts and getting some rest too, what will happen is the cells, again, will become harder for the virus to penetrate and reproduce, but that takes a little longer and takes more effort and more sleep and everything else. So if you can prevent it, that's the better way to go. And since the swine flu is believed by some to be a possibly very serious epidemic. I, again, would urge you strongly to research this stuff and to consider adding to your vitamin C. Now we'll talk about something else. The representative in Congress by the name of Lynn Jenkins, she is a Republican congresswoman from Kansas who kind of, sort of, apologized recently. What happened was, she said she was sorry, but let me get into that in just a moment. She said that the Republican Party needs a great white hope to in order to win the presidency and Congress and so forth. And she said at a gathering in her district, quote, "I suggest to any of you who are concerned about that, who are Republican, there are some great young Republican minds in Washington." Again, she was referring to this great white hope concept. And someone went ahead and recorded video of her event, which was near Topeka, and gave it to the Kansas Democratic Party. And, of course, they publicized it. Then a spokesman of hers said, "She apologizes if her words have offended anyone. That was not the intent in any way, shape, or form." She denied later that she had been speaking in racial terms about the challenge that the party faced from President Obama, who, as everybody knows, is the first African-American president, or half-African. She claimed she didn't know what it was about, that is, the Great White Hope mentioned, that it had to do with a boxer, Jack Johnson, who had won the World Heavyweight Championship at the beginning of the 20th century, and that they were trying to find someone who could beat him, and he was black, beat him and take back the championship for white people. Well, in those days, it was clearly racist. There's no question about that. And a lot of people think that perhaps Representative Jenkins from Kansas, a Republican, was in fact being racist in her comments, and she denied it. I don't know whether she was being racist or not. I have a suspicion, but I certainly don't know what's in her head or heart. But I do know this. When you make an apology that's not an apology, you haven't apologized. And Representative Jenkins is by no means alone in this. There are plenty of public figures who at various points have said, "Well, I'm really sorry if I offended anybody. That wasn't my intention." Okay, you're not apologizing. An apology goes something like this: "I'm sorry, I screwed up, I was wrong." Okay, that's an apology. "And I hope you forgive me," that's part of the apology. "I ask your forgiveness and I'll try to do better." Okay, that's an apology. "I apologize if I offended anyone" is really saying, "You misinterpreted what I said, you were offended, you were wrong, and I'm really sorry if I hurt your feelings. I care about your feelings, but I'm not admitting I was wrong." That's the problem. If you don't admit you're wrong, you're not apologizing. You're excusing. You're making excuses. That's okay if you want to make an excuse for something, but it's not an apology. And Representative Jenkins didn't apologize. Obviously, I think she should. I'll leave that to the voters in Kansas, clearly. I have no choice. But whenever you hear a public figure talking about, "I apologize if I offended or hurt anybody's feelings," and so on and so forth, they're not apologizing. A similar event occurred with a public official at a lower level, someplace else in the Midwest, I think, where they apologized for passing around clearly racist cartoons and or cartoons depicting the president as a member of the ape family. Clearly that is racist. And when they say they didn't realize it was, okay, maybe. But again, the apologies are always the same. You can tell that they're really not serious about the apologies. Want to change subjects again. Do want to remind you of tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire and Jeff on blogging .blogspot.com. But I wanted to talk about radio. Radio, in spite of what you're hearing now, is a wonderful medium. It's all around us. It's ever present in our lives. We've all grown up with it. You can't avoid it. Many of us use it only for music in the background, which is fine. I will tell you how I listen to radio very often. When I'm working during the day, I have radio on in the background. whether it's Blog Talk Radio's host or something else, I'll have it on in the background. And if I have to be on the phone, as I often do during the day, I kill the sound. Or if it's an archived program, I pause it on the computer. And then I return to it when I'm off the phone. And the first thing I should tell you is there's a lot of radio available on your computer, on the Internet. And it's available in a variety of ways. Of course, Blog Talk Radio you already know about, or you wouldn't be hearing this. The other media that are available for listening to radio include specific radio stations. If you Google a radio station that you used to listen to when you were a kid in the city from which you came, you'll often find that that station has a not only a website, but that they stream their audio and or archive it. So that means you can listen to it live, or you can listen to programs that have played previously. One of the stations I like to listen to from time to time is KNX in Los Angeles, because it's all news, and they are running through their news and information about every 30 minutes, so it keeps you up to date. CNN is also something you can listen to if you just want national and international news. KNX is local to Los Angeles, but also covers a lot of national and international news. But and there are other stations like that, of course. But I wanted to tell you about something which is kind of unusual, which is called Receiva.com. I have no financial interest in this. This is not a commercial. But Receiva is R-E-C-I-V-A, and it's Receiva.com. And on Receiva, you can choose either a genre, and it just became evident I don't speak French, or you can pick a city, a location, and you can listen to pretty much anything you want. So, for example, if you choose talk, or let's choose something else. I choose jazz frequently. So I will pick jazz, and it will then present a list of jazz broadcasters, or internet broadcasters in some cases, that are available on the Internet. So, as an example, I have listened to jazz from Russia and Germany and Hungary and, of course, various places in the United States. And you can do that, and all you need besides Internet access is you need a player. The two most common players are Windows Media Player, which came with your computer, or Real Player, R-E-A-L. And Real Player is available free. They also have players for which they charge, but the basic player is free and is plenty good enough. And you can get that at R-E-A-L, real.com. And as I said, you likely have Windows Media Player with your computer. And, again, both of those are free, and you can hear pretty much everything, everything and anything. If you don't want to listen to a particular kind of music, and there are all kinds of music, there's country, there's also jazz, obviously, all kinds of rock, new age music, anything you can possibly imagine, and probably several things you can't. It was available on Receiva. And in terms of talk, again, any kind of talk you can imagine, progressive, conservative, reactionary, I guess there's plenty of that. And you can just choose talk, and then it'll take you to a list. It starts out with things that are numerical, and then it goes to the K's, and eventually it would go to the W's. I'm referring to station call signs. So if you are interested at all in listening to something you haven't heard before, although the usual suspects are there, you can also hear Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, all the others. And, of course, the progressive talk show hosts as well, Stephanie Miller, Ed Schultz, Tom Hartman. You can get it through Receiva. And it's kind of like a grab bag, and even though when you pick a station, you won't necessarily know what's going to be on, you'll obviously hear it. Earlier today, I was listening to a show which was coming out of a small, well, two of them. One was a small town in Oregon where the host was talking about fishing and how great a year it was for tuna. Frankly, I have no interest in that, but it was kind of interesting to hear that one-way conversation, much like I'm having now. By the way, if you wish to call in, let me mention again, the phone number is 347-994-3796. And let me also mention next week's show, we're going to have a spokesperson from the company that makes a device that records from records, LPs, to either CDs or MP3s. So you can I suppose if your grandmother has the album of My Fair Lady and you want to take that to the gym with you or in your car by recording it to an MP3 format, you can do that. And he's going to tell us how and how you get the device and what's involved. In any event, that's next week from 8:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Pacific time. Receiva website, as I mentioned, is reciva.com. And I think you'll have fun with that. It's really kind of a fun website. And you can listen to all kinds of different things. Wanted to talk, getting back to the combination, I guess, of politics and economics. But before I do that, let me cover another subject. There are two things that are going on right now as we speak, and I'm sure they're taking away some of our potential callers. One is that college football is starting tonight on television. I don't know if this is... our exhibition games, or if they are games that quote-unquote count. And I have zero interest in football and probably less in college. But that is a phenomenon that is going on, and it actually has started tonight. Most of the games, as you know, and as a good friend of mine reminded me, are on Saturdays, but they are now playing during the week, and one of those is tonight. But the other event, which is perhaps interesting in a peculiar and bizarre way, is they are burying Michael Jackson. I'm not talking about the former radio show host, thankfully. I am talking about the musical personality who died, if you can believe this, about 2 months ago. They are finally, in quotes, I'd also put it in italics, but never mind that. They are finally burying Michael Jackson. They're doing so at Forest Lawn in Southern California. Now, part of the process was that he was being autopsied and he was being examined to see if there was a criminal cause of his death, and there was, unquestionably. This was a homicide. Now, a homicide is not necessarily a murder. A homicide is the taking of someone else's life, another human's life. The reality is that it appears that someone else gave him a drug and it killed him. I don't know enough facts to speak intelligently about what actually occurred, and besides a couple of people, neither does anybody else, though that it hasn't stopped most people, obviously. There's been a great deal of speculation and statements of absolute truth, which no one knows about. But the thing that struck me as really peculiar is 2 months between death and burial. Just seems a long time, and besides bizarre and frightening, like much of Michael Jackson's life was, I don't wish to be grotesque, but I mean, I know about embalming fluid, but that's got to be kind of like a really ugly, grotesque, and smelly, perhaps, body at this point. Maybe not. Maybe they've deodorized it and embalmed it and so on, but that seems like a terrible way to treat a body. And when I said finally buried, by the way, what I meant by that is the news indicated that he may be buried somewhere else later. I didn't get the full story on that, and I have no idea why. But that's supposedly what the situation is. He's going to be buried now, and then he may be, the expression is disinterred. The more correct name is dug up and buried somewhere else. Very strange. I don't understand it. In addition to keeping the public out to the best of their ability, they also managed to get restricted airspace over Forest Lawn, which is the name of the cemetery where he's being buried, so that you can't fly over Forest Lawn during the ceremony. Obviously, they want to avoid helicopter-bearing paparazzi, but it's a strange world. We feel more in a celebrity's death as a society, than we do about the poor guy who doesn't have health insurance that actually has a need. Enough of that. Very briefly, I want to touch upon, I mentioned politics and economics. We have about a quarter of an hour left, If you wish to call in, you're welcome to do that. The number, again, is 347-994-3796. And the name of the show is Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. And in another moment, I'll do my self-promoting commercials in a second. Other thing I was talking about is what I call Econ 102. It's not quite as simple as 101. We did talk about economics earlier in the context of healthcare reform. But there is something else to talk about because it was discussed in the news today. And what that was the subject of unemployment. Now, if you're unemployed, it's a terrible situation. I was one time unemployed for about 6 weeks, and it was the worst time I can remember. It was awful. You're scared. You're obviously poor. You can't pay for anything. But it's a terrible, terrible time in one's life. And if you're unemployed or someone you know is, there's no getting around the fact. It's bad. But that said, unemployment in terms of the economic recovery is a relatively meaningless number in the abstract, or in the concrete for that matter. The reason it's meaningless is this. Unemployment is what economists call a lagging indicator. And what that means in simple terms is that unemployment really doesn't clear up until the rest of the economy is recovered. And you can understand why. I think we talked about this briefly last week. The fact is that if you're running a business and the economy is not doing well, so people aren't buying, what ends up happening is that you can't afford to hire anybody. Moreover, when there's been a moderately serious recession, as there has been, you're fearful of hiring people because you may have to fire them or it may crimp your income because of that expense of having people working for you. And so you're afraid. The effect, which is understandable, the effect of that is what we were just saying, which is that unemployment is a lagging indicator. It clears up after the rest of the economy. The biggest effect on the economy, if you're looking at it for a single cause, would be consumer spending. Consumer spending makes up about two-thirds of what is the gross domestic product. The gross domestic product consists of all the goods and services that are sold in dollar terms in the United States. So what consumers spend or don't spend is where the big impact is. So if people aren't spending, no one will hire. When the unemployment rate and initial claims for unemployment was down in the last reporting period, people were saying, well, great, the economy is improving and the recovery is close at hand. It doesn't mean that at all. It's an aberration. What will happen is that the unemployment statistics will do what might be referred to as scraping along the bottom. It'll go up, it'll go down, it'll bounce as the car travels forward. If you can picture that, you know, someone in a soapbox derby car, as they're driving along going forward, they're hitting the bottom, the cement sometimes, and sometimes they're traveling smoothly, and they're bouncing along that. Well, bottom line on it is that if the consumer spending improves and improves long enough and the rest of the economy improves, unemployment claims, both initial and ongoing, will go down. That's it. If it doesn't, they won't. And, of course, they will. You can. Next week we'll talk about what the stimulus does in the economy and why it is impossible for it not to have a beneficial effect. And we'll also talk about the potential harmful effect, possible long-term or later-term inflation, which it may well have. In fact, is very likely to occur. But in the meantime, we'll have everybody working. That's something, as I say, takes too long to discuss right now, but we will discuss it next time. Very briefly, I wanted to mention one other promotional aspect. My wife and I have begun a T-shirt store online, which anybody can do, by the way. And ours is located at Zazzle.com, Zazzle.com, / and one word, mobile and peculiar. The mobile comes from the obvious discussion we had earlier, which is that we are involved in the mobile home business. And peculiar was just chosen because we thought it would be unusual. So that website's T-shirts are perhaps a little peculiar. Some of them are political. Some of them are spiritual or cute or clever. I will tell you now what one of them says. One of them on the front, and this may not be the exact wording, but you can go to the website to see it exactly and purchase the T-shirt if you wish. One of them says, all of Limbaugh's knowledge on economics can be put into a bumblebee's navel. And then it says, continued at the bottom and on the back, and still leave room for Bush's brain and Cheney's heart. If that offends you, I apologize. I take it back. I'm not apologizing. If that offends you, it's your problem, unlike Representative Jenkins we were talking about earlier. But there are lots of T-shirts. There's lots of funny stuff, or what we think is funny, and there's lots of just interesting stuff. One of them says, my dog is my therapist. That was something my wife came up with, along with, I think one of them was, I am a rider, or life is a spiritual carousel. Anyway, take a look if you'd like at Zazzle.com/mobile and peculiar. And speaking of mobile, let me mention again, tinyurl.com/mobile millionaire. And that will take you to a website called Scribd, or Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D.com. And there you can find not just my content, but a lot of other folks who are making books and articles available, some free, but those are usually not in book form. Those are just brief essays and comments. I think you'll find it interesting. There was an excerpt of Howard Dean's book on the site when I last looked, and it talked about the need for real healthcare financing reform. Howard Dean, besides being the former chairman of the Democratic Party, was also a candidate for the presidency a few years ago. That is, he tried for the nomination. That's the one John Kerry won before he lost to Bush. The other thing I wanted to mention is, besides giving you the number for the Capitol switchboard, again, if you prefer not to do it that way but would like to go to the net and find out who your congressional representative is, along with your senators, you can do that by going to Democrats.com/Congress. We looked at that earlier, and you can put in your street address and your zip code, and you'll find out again who your representative is, and you'll get a phone number so you can call them and register your view, at the risk of pushing what I said before, that the health care reform plans that are now before Congress, even at $1 trillion over 10 years, will cost per year $312.50 per person. So it's a relatively trivial sum. When I was mentioning that to somebody the other evening, they said, well, if that's all it is, I'm ready to write a check. So that'll kind of give you an idea. It really, you know, not all of us can write a check for $312.50 or multiply that times the number of people in our family. But you do that as compared to paying what you're paying for insurance now, you'd still pay something. But you'd obviously pay less. There really is a very simple way to create a public option, which is to allow people to buy into Medicare. I'm not the first person who's mentioned that, but it's a fairly simple process. Medicare is a plan that most people like, and the reason they like it, other than what it costs them, is because they get to go to a doctor of their choice. They don't have to go out of pocket in terms of doctor visits. That's to some extent single payer, but they do pay a premium each year, as you would if you bought into Medicare. Tom Hartman, who is a progressive radio show host on not Air America anymore, he's syndicated by another group, but he's on most of those same stations, talks about the fact that you ought to be able to buy into Medicare for an amount which is larger than the amount of people who are doing it now, so that you can get some financial stability within Medicare, because there are some problems with Medicare in terms of the financial stability of the program. But no one can doubt that it's an effective program. although Veterans Administration programs have been criticized in terms of health care. Michael Reed, was it Michael Reed? I'm not sure. It was a hospital in the Midwest that, Michael Reese, I think, that was having problems in terms of providing adequate care. But the fact is that most veterans who get medical care from the VA, though they don't like waiting, as they sometimes have to do, do like the care they get. And that, too, is a government-run program, if you will, a government option, as is Medicare. So keep that in mind when you're having that discussion with folks, and specifically when you're talking to an aide at your congressional representative's office. When you call your congressional representative, you will not, in all likelihood, speak to your congressman or congresswoman. You will speak instead to one of their aides. Same thing at the White House comment line. Obviously, the president's not going to take your call or mine, but they do tally up those comments, and it can make a difference if we all spend a buck, make a phone call, or if you have free long distance from Vonage or your cell phone, make the call and leave a message in the case of the comment line, or speak to your congressional representatives or senator's aide. The fact that your senator, for example, is a different party from yours, likewise with your congressional representative, doesn't mean they're not listening to the public. Call them all, please. The public option is important if we're going to have serious reform and serious savings. And, you know, we think we have no effect, but we do. So for what it's worth, again, that White House comment line is 202-456-1111, and I think it's worth a lot. The Capitol switchboard is 202-224-3121. And in both cases, you can make a comment. I would suggest calling both. President Obama needs to know that the public wants the public option. You don't necessarily want government health care. I do. I think single payer is a better idea. But even if you disagree with me and you believe in a public option, please let the White House comment line know that. Likewise, the Capitol switchboard, once you find out who your congressional representative and your senators are, let them know too. Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. It has an impact. Okay, that said, we've got about a minute and a half left. Let me request of you that you join us again next week, 8:30 to 9:30 Pacific time. That's 11:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. And I can't figure out the time in Eastern Canada, so I'm afraid you're on your own. That would be Atlantic time. But join us again. We're going to have a guest, if all goes well. And you can call in. I'll give the number now again so you can have it for next week. It's 347-994-3796. I'll continue talking until the program is over, of course. And of course, it's too late for phone calls now. But let me invite you again to Zazzle.com/mobileandpeculiar. And tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire, and finally, jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. Thanks for joining us. Hope you join us again next week. I expect I'll be cut off mid-sentence at some point. But again, thank you, and I hope you have a good night if I am cut off. I hope you have a good night even if I'm not cut off. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Thursday night. Oh, we still have 90 seconds or so. So I still hope you have a wonderful night. But since we do have a couple of minutes, let me just, or a minute and a half, I should say. Next week or the week after, we'll also be talking about, as I mentioned earlier, the effect that the stimulus has had and will have on the economy. If you have some feelings about high-speed rail and where that should go, we'd love to hear from you. Well, we only have 60 seconds, so we can't talk a lot more about the stimulus effect. Just remember, please, if you will, the $312.50 per person per year, vitamin C for swine flu and other virus protection, receiva.com if you want to hear some interesting radio, and try to remember, you can go to newsoftheweird.com and see some interesting stuff that we weren't able to cover in the time we had allotted. This is Jeff Bushman, speaking of everything. And we probably didn't cover all of that, so we'll try to do that in subsequent weeks. In a few weeks, as I said, we go back a half an hour to the 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time slot. Hope you join us next week at 8:30 Pacific, and whatever time it is in your time zone. And do join us next time. Think about calling in and joining us with your issues and to find out about what you want to know about the device that records. Thanks. Have a great night.